6 years later, he makes the same argument to Joseph Cabell. The way to have good and safe government is not to trust it all to one, but to divide it among the many, distributing to everyone exactly the functions he is competent to. Let the national government be entrusted with the defense of the nation and its foreign and federal relations, the state governments with the civil rights, laws, police, administration of what concerns the state generally, the counties with the local concerns of the counties, and each ward direct the interests within itself. It is by dividing and subdividing these republics, from the great national one down through all its subdivisions and subordinations, until it ends in the administration of every man's farm by himself, by placing under every one what his own eye may superintend, that all will be done for the best. And here we see again Jefferson's civic humanism emerging, a scheme in which each person participates in government as a fulfilling and enriching part of his life. Where every man is a sharer in the direction of his ward republic or some of the higher ones and feels that he is a participator in the government of affairs, not merely at an election one day in the year, but every day. When there shall not be a man in the state who will not be a member of some one of its councils, great or small, he will let the heart be torn out of his body sooner than his party, his power be wrested from him by a czar or a Bonaparte. As Cato then concluded every speech with the words, Carthago delenda est, Carthage must be destroyed, so do I end every opinion with the injunction, divide the counties into wards. Well, in 1818, he began planning a new public university for Virginia, what is now the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, which was chartered the next year. And Jefferson was instrumental in designing everything about the university, its project, its architecture, and its curriculum. He states the goals of the university in the report of the commissioners for the University of Virginia in 1818. To form statesmen, legislators, and judges on whom public prosperity and individual happiness are so much to depend. To expound the principles and structure of government, the laws which regulate the intercourse of nations, those formed municipally for our own government, and a sound spirit of legislation. To develop the reasoning faculties of our youth. Enlarge their minds, cultivate their morals, and instill into them the precepts of virtue and order. And generally, to form them to habits of reflection and correct action, rendering them examples of virtue to others and of happiness within themselves. And then he proposes a curriculum. I'm going to look at it. It basically has 10 branches, each which will have a separate professor. There'll be one branch will be ancient languages, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. Another modern languages, French, Spanish, Italian, German, and Anglo-Saxon. We'll return to that. It's a very interesting requirement, Anglo-Saxon. Mathematics, pure algebra, fluxions, which was the word for calculus at the time, geometry, architecture. Physico-mathematics, mechanics, statics, dynamics, what we would call physics today. What he calls physics or natural philosophy, which was in fact chemistry and mineralogy. There's a professorship in botany and zoology, the life sciences, anatomy and medicine, government, political economy, law of nature and nations, and history, being interwoven with politics and law. We'll return to that one again, too. A professorship in municipal law, and finally one in ideology, general grammar, ethics, rhetoric, belles lettres, and the fine arts, which is pretty much what we would call philosophy today. Well, the strangest and perhaps most disturbing thing about Jefferson's curricular meddling is that it's not only an advanced statement of an enlightened scientism, it's also an early form of what today we call political correctness, one that will be replicated in almost every southern college of the antebellum period, where if you want to teach, you must pledge loyalty to the reigning orthodoxy. And the reigning orthodoxy is states' rights, pro-slavery, and you must agree with Jefferson on the Missouri question, that all Southerners have the right to bring their slaves to the Western Territory. In fact, that was part of his motivation in creating the university in the first place. He writes to General James Breckinridge in 1821, "If, as has been estimated, we send $300,000 a year to the Northern seminaries for the instruction of our own sons, then we must have there 500 of our sons imbibing opinions and principles in discord with those of their own country. This canker is eating on the vitals of our existence, and if not arrested at once, we'll be beyond remedy. We are now certainly furnishing recruits to their school.